Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Presented by Allied Home Security.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us in studio in about an hour. The Texans cut Philip Lindsay yesterday. Seth, what did you make of Ian Rapoport and his tweet reporting this? Like, whew, big surprise. Like, he was, Ian Rapoport was legitimately surprised that the Texans cut Philip Lindsay. And look, even the national guy, like, maybe especially the national guys, I can't blame them for not being completely tuned in on what's happening play to play with the Houston Texans. It's not been a fun team to watch this year if you're not emotionally invested. And if you're emotionally invested, it's really not been fun to watch most of the year. This past Sunday, the exception to that.
I think, just real quick,
the tweet read from Ian Rapoport, a surprise. The Texans are cutting running back Philip Lindsay. Source said he heads to waivers.
Yeah, I think Philip Lindsay is in that Peyton Hillis territory right now. Ooh. Where people know his name and they don't realize that, oh, wow, he's actually done nothing for the last few years. Because he had it. Now, no offense to Peyton Hillis. Peyton Hillis had like one ridiculously good year. He was on a Madden cover the next year for the Browns. Remember how weird that was?
Yeah.
And then he just disappeared. I think he might have had... Remember, he started thinking that he was a CIA special agent and stuff.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
really?
It got weird.
Well, now I feel bad. Yeah.
Yeah, it got kind of weird with him. Yeah. So Philip Lindsay's not at that territory. His really good seasons or promising season early on wasn't as good as Peyton Hillis, but he hasn't really done much in the last couple of years. If you look at some of his numbers from last year, it's not like this year should have been that much of a surprise.
Yeah.
And it's just that even behind a really bad offensive line, which a lot of people are pointing out, yes, he was running behind a bad offensive line, but you have to understand nobody else running behind a bad offensive line was as bad as Philip Lindsay. There are other bad offensive lines in the NFL. Philip Lindsay was by far the worst at yards after contact, things that don't matter really, whether you've got a bad offensive line or not. Zero broken tackles on the season. You know, 128 people have broken a tackle in the NFL this year. Philip Lindsay is not one of them.
Right. That to me is the most damning thing. Like, you know how it goes, Seth. Like, anytime you bring up a point about something that people feel emotional the opposite way, they make it as if you are fully blaming the one thing. Like, you know, that I pointed out yesterday that Philip Lindsay statistically is one of the worst running backs this century, which is that's a fact. People were going, oh,
that's a fact.
Yeah, exactly. People were going, well, you say the blocking is terrible. I know. I'm not absolving the offensive line for being terrible this year. The offensive line is bad too. This just in, the Texans have the worst offense in football. It's not Philip Lindsay's fault 100%. It's not as though they cut Philip Lindsay and now they're going to be the 15th best offense in football.
Yeah,
they will still suck offensively for the rest of the season, probably.
It's not like cutting Philip. Like, two things can be true.
Yeah.
You can have a bunch of aging, underwhelming running backs perform just that way, like a lot of people would have predicted in the preseason, while also having a bad offensive line in front of them.
Right.
So
right.
That none of this is rocket science. They don't have good football players. And I guess probably the most disappointing thing is just that some of the, like, Titus Howard is, supposedly improved at guard, I guess. Tim Kelly says he's made improvements.
Right.
I guess I'd have to go back and watch the first couple weeks and see just how bad he was in the first couple weeks. But I'm not seeing it with my eyeballs necessarily, this improvement that Tytus Howard is making.
You know, if the improvement thing, if the basis for the improvement, I got to go back and look and see just how horrible he was at the beginning to see if what I'm seeing now is actual improvement. That's not a great place to be if you're Tytus Howard. I would tell Nick Caserio if he were sitting in here right now, I would say don't stop with Philip Lindsay. Keep going. David Johnson does not belong in an NFL backfield either right now. Like Seth, you and I were talking about this yesterday. I said yesterday, somehow we got on a conversation about what the offseason could look like, and out of, you know, just impromptu, I sort of gave my wish list of five or six things that I hope happen or I think need to happen for the Texans to make a big jump next year. Not to a Super Bowl contender or anything, but just a garden variety average football team. And one of them was clean out the backfield, like clean sweep. Get everybody who's in there right now. And you know what? Scotty Phillips, you too. Just everybody. Just clean everybody out and bring all new people in. Philip Lindsay waving him yesterday was the first step to that. And don't stop there. David Johnson does not belong in an NFL backfield either. Cut him. And we got a lot of people texting in, Seth, hey, has anybody taken Lindsay's spot yet? Are there any intriguing running back names out there? I know you pulled up this free agent list. We can touch on maybe an interesting name or two. If you see any interesting names on this list, I will say this. Forget about the free agents that are out there right now and just put that aside. If the Texans were to cut David Johnson and then just go pluck a couple guys off of young players off of practice squads around the league and just throw them on the 53, I am down. That would excite me. Then it's at least it's something new and it's something with a little bit of potential. Right now, Philip Lindsay had less than zero potential, and David Johnson, I feel the same way about. He's just got a higher salary, and for whatever reason, he's in a better space with the higher-ups with the Texans and Philip Lindsay was.
It was. I choose to always remember him as the guy that fumbled that jet sweep early on.
Yeah, that was the first game of the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it was almost the very first time we saw Philip Lindsay.
Yep.
Said, ooh, a little excitement here. I did see one of our listeners yesterday asked if the Texans just could do something with the receivers, maybe perhaps, yeah, instead of running the ball all the time to try to try to take some of the pressure off the offensive line. I think the problem there is if you start talking about the short passing game as a way to basically simulate a running game, they call it the long handoff. If you do screens and little swing passes, is that the Texans aren't any good at it. They have such little ability to spring a surprise screen on anybody. It seems like defenses sniff it out every single time. And then you get those big lumbering oafish offensive linemen out there in space. They're two steps late getting out there. They can't track guys down in space. And it hasn't worked out well. I mean, it's a general incompetence by multiple members of the offense to where I don't know if play calling can do anything when it doesn't seem like they execute whichever play they run all that well. The offensive lineman can't execute normal run blocking. So to change it to screen blocking or RPO blocking or anything else like that, they're just not adept at it.
Right, right. They got to learn checkers before they learn chess. Do you see any of these names? I'm looking at this list that you and I have pulled up on these free agent running. What's your, I guess, if there's a specific name that jumps out at you, you're like, yeah, I'd like to see him go after that guy, then I'm all ears. But in terms of an approach, I just said I'd rather have him pluck young guys off of somebody's practice squad and just go with that. That's at least intriguing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd rather go with somebody off of a practice squad because that's something that's in the future. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing about, like, Todd Gurley. Okay, if Todd Gurley has some magical knee treatment that he just did in the offseason, what am I going to do? Sign Todd Gurley to a one-year deal? And the very best that can happen is maybe he vaults himself off to somewhere else because his knees have regenerated. But that's unlikely. So you're just kind of – you're burning time with a guy who's banged up and injured. You know what about it? You know who's still out there, I think?
Who?
TJ Yeldon. Bear with me for a second because we can talk about huge, monstrous Jacksonville running backs that have revived their career elsewhere. Leonard Fournette was kind of just washed up and thrown out, and then he finds himself in Tampa as part of a winning Super Bowl effort.
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be reclaimed in TJ Yeldon?
I haven't watched him closely enough the last couple of years to know, but TJ Yeldon's always been a weird one to me. He's got a weird running. He's a big back. You're right. He's 6'1". He's always had a weird running style to me.
He runs like a Flintstone.
Yeah.
Like he's got that upright. Very upright, but he's got short little legs like Bam Bam or Fred.
Right.
And he kind of, I think there was, wasn't there an episode where Fred was playing football and he had a lethal stiff arm. He had like a caveman stiff arm, but he was completely upright the whole time. That's what TJ Yeldon looked like.
I don't know. Now, are you going to send me on a Flintstones binge today? Was there an episode where Fred stiff-armed people play football?
It seems like there's probably even a gif of Fred Flintstone breaking fools off.
I'm looking that up during the break. That's my project. That's my project during the break.
Did you notice, by the way, that Deontay Foreman almost does kind of a Derrick Henry impression when he runs. Because he's a big dude, and then he hit a couple of stiff arms in that game.
He did.
Obviously he's not as good as Derrick Henry, but I wonder if they might look at Deontay Foreman and think, you know what? He's got some of those same elements that when maybe we can give Derrick Henry a spell, but still run the same type of offense when he comes back. Foreman, if he just can keep his head screwed on straight, he might have a shot at making it there.
He looks spry, no doubt. He looks spry on Sunday. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain joins us in about 45 minutes. The time to trust James Click appears to be upon us in a big way based on one player, and it's not Carlos Correa. I'll tell you who it is next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday. Happy Thanksgiving weekend to all of you. I just looked outside. The traffic, a little sparse out there, so it should be a smooth ride into work if you are one of the few that are working today. If you are not caught up on the latest with the Astros, it looks like one of their free agents has definitely found another home. It looks like Kendall Graveman, who the Astros picked up at the trade deadline for Abraham Toro and Joe Smith from the Mariners, looks like he's going to be going to, I would say, Seth, a team. We know the Astros had to deal with this team in the postseason in 2021. I would say that if the Astros are in the midst still of a championship window, the White Sox are a team that they're going to have to deal with. Kendall Graveman is headed to the White Sox, reportedly 3 years, $24 million. And my general feeling on this is good for Kendall Graveman. One, I liked him in his time here. He was a very likable player for the Astros. But two, I'm not going to get too worked up about this because I think James Click, if there's anything I trust James Click to go find, Seth, it's pitchers that fill very specific roles on the margins, because that's all they do in Tampa Bay. The whole pitching staff is Kendall Graveman's and poor man's Kendall Graveman's in Tampa Bay.
Yeah, and I think that I don't know if this is fair or accurate, but at least the perception is that Click and Tampa's approach is a little bit more flexible than it has been with the Astros. Just in that, like, for a long time, people thought, oh, okay, well, the Astros want pitchers who throw four-seam fastballs and curveballs, and then there you go. And that basically they'll just tell guys to throw more breaking stuff because you're good at it, and then mix in a really good four-seam fastball. I think that was true for a while, but things change, and like they change with the circumstances. In Tampa, for whatever it's worth, they've had a lot more variety with their pitchers. And now you can't really put a theme onto what kind of guy they have. So, you know, maybe that was a source of conflict between Click and Strom. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but for whatever it's worth, hopefully it means that moving forward, maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe the Astros with James Click have even more of an advantage in pitcher selection. We'll see how the development goes without Strom at the head of everything, but at least in pitcher selection and talent identification, Click might genuinely be better at it than the last guys.
Yeah, maybe
not,
so.
Not Strom, but Luno.
Right. As far as the personnel guy evaluating, and I think. Some people are forgetting they signed Pedro Baez last year, who only pitched four and a third innings for the Astros this year. That was their splurge last year, other than bringing back Michael Brantley. Their splurge in free agency was Pedro Baez in the bullpen, and he hardly got on the field for the Astros. So they've got it. You know, he's already a sunken cost for this team. So hopefully they get something out of him. But, you know, I trust Click to find the Ryan Stanics of the world. You know what I mean,
yeah.
Seth? It's, the one-year, $1.5 million type guys who you have under team control. They've still got Maton, who was really good in the postseason. They could still bring back Yimi Garcia, who also good in the postseason, and another deadline pickup. They're bringing back most of this team. Like, and now they had seven free agents. They're bringing back one already with Justin Verlander. Graveman is out, so now you're down to five. I think it's Correa, Raley, Yimi Garcia, and one or two. I think Marwin's one of them. Like, you know, Marwin, we love Marwin, but he's not a guy you're sweating. Are they bringing back Marwin? So this is a team. They're bringing back most of this team next year.
Yeah, and, one guy that's out there, Sean, that I think they need to look at, get a good long, hard look at, is Ryan Tepera, the reliever from the White Sox.
Yeah.
If we're sending Graveman up to Chicago, we might as well bring Ryan Tepera in, if only so that we can all line up and beat him with pillowcases full of soap.
Okay, how would he...
Ryan Tepera was the guy that alleged that the... or hinted that the Astros might be cheating at home during the playoffs.
Yeah, like unprompted. He wasn't even asked about it.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Local kid.
Right.
You know what? This is a shame for Ryan Tepera, and this is why you always keep your stupid yap shut.
Yeah.
Okay, kids? When there's a chance for you to piss off a former employer a potential future employer for no reason at all, just don't do it. Like, Ryan Tepera is out there right now. I was impressed by him in the playoffs, you know, especially given how much attention he'd drawn to himself. He did a good job in the playoffs versus the Astros. And like, he's a Houston kid, went to Sam Houston. You might say, yeah, boy, this would be awesome. Bring Ryan Tepera in here. But now I'll be pissed if they sign Ryan Tepera.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think most Astro fans, if they sign him, he'd have to win them over. Let's just put it that way. Look, once he comes in for a few weeks and he's got a 1.34 ERA at the end of the month of April or whatever, then I think Astro fans will forgive and forget. But you're right. I truly think if they were to sign him, first of all, I think he'd be a good signing. He's a good pitcher and he fills a need, but I think he would have to win some people over. Did you see that? And I'm thinking about this because as we sit here and talk about these contracts with the Astros, what is weighing on the back of my mind is I wonder if they're going to use some of this money to extend either Tucker or Yordan Alvarez and buy out those arbitration years like they did with Bregman a few years ago. Did you see the deal that Tampa Bay is getting ready to give Wander Franco, Dick Vitale's favorite, Wander Franco? They're getting ready to give him a 12-year, $230 million deal.
Yeah. You act as if we didn't basically predict this on the show yesterday. Of course I saw that. I saw it coming, Sean.
Yeah.
So you and I said, yeah, wouldn't it be great if It wouldn't be interesting if all of a sudden the Rays started spending money, kind of the way the Padres all of a sudden started spending money and bought their way to credibility. Now, the Rays are already very, very credible. They just never spend any money. I did see that.
I think it's a great deal for the Rays. And I think it's the kind of deal you have to do if you're the Rays. Look, Franco's only been in the league. He's only been in Major League Baseball for 70 games. So it's a gamble, but he's somebody who had the pedigree. You know, remember Dickie V came on with us to talk about the playoffs last year when the Astros were playing the Rays, and out of nowhere at the end of the interview, he's like, let me give you guys a name. Wander Franco. That is the guy. Dickie V's got to feel vindicated today that they're giving Franco. By the way, did you see, first of all, Dickie V is going through cancer treatments right now. I don't know if you saw, did you see the video of him last night, Seth, getting ready to call Gonzaga and UCLA? I don't know if you saw it on Twitter.
No, like I did
not. He just got Dick Vitale, for those who don't know, just got out of the hospital. He literally got off of his hospital bed after cancer treatments, and he got cleared to go call number one versus number two last night, Gonzaga and UCLA. And during the intro, when they do the head shot of the play by play and the color analyst there getting ready to set up the game, you know, giving the bullet points on keys to the game and stuff, he just broke down in tears. He just broke down crying over how thrilled he was to be there. I would encourage you to go find it if you're a college basketball or just a fan of Dick Vitale. We're big Dick Vitale fans here, but he's got to be happy with the Wander Franco deal.
You know, I wonder with the Rays. I don't know where they are. It seemed like they were close to getting some kind of a deal to split their season and go up and play half their games in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Last week was a critical week for it, and I don't know exactly what happened with it, but you wonder, okay, are they making a push because they got to get some kind of a stadium deal up in Montreal and you know, potentially make it worth their while.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the – if they play half their game in games in Montreal, can they really be called the Rays, Sean? I feel like you got to come up with a new name that of some animal that exists both in Florida and French Canada.
Okay, I don't know if that animal exists, to be honest with you. Like, you got all that swampland down in Florida, and then you got all that the rural woods up there. And
you know what? It could be hummingbirds. They migrate.
Yeah, that would be a very intimidating. A very intimidating logo. The hummingbird.
The hummingbirds. Yeah. Like about basically, and then staff their squad with entirely like Chris Sale types.
Yeah,
these incredibly featherweight type baseball.
Here's
players.
Our mascot, Hummer. All right. There was a firing in the NFL yesterday. Do the Texans need to consider doing the same? That's next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday. John McClain is joining us at the top of the hour. He's on his way in. He texted, so looking forward to seeing the general here on a Thanksgiving Eve edition of the show. News around the NFL yesterday. We talked about Philip Lindsay getting let go by the Texans. The Jets have COVID issues in their quarterback room, but Zach Wilson will be starting for them on Sunday. We'll get into all that in headlines here shortly. News outside of Houston, Seth, Jason Garrett. And you kind of alluded to this as we were going off the air yesterday, right? Like on the way out of the show, you mentioned that you kind of casually mentioned something about Jason Garrett being available for hanging out on Thanksgiving this year. So I feel like in addition to predicting the Wander Franco contract extension, you also predicted Jason Garrett getting fired at lunchtime yesterday. It was a good day for you yesterday.
I'm finally tuned into the universe and my sources with a Z, Sean. I'm feeling that moment. Everything's coming together.
Zen.
I think it was the Texans' victory.
Mm-hmm.
Just got a feel for everything. There had been a report by, well, you know what it was they asked Joe Judge after the game about Jason Garrett's status, and he said something kind of vague. That's to be determined, or I'm not going to go into that right now. I mean, anything other than a yes in that situation, yeah, you know something's up. So, yeah.
So Jason Garrett is out as OC for the Giants. Freddie Kitchens is in. Remember Freddie Kitchens, the one-year head coach of the Cleveland Browns, who was
hand-selected by Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. Baker Mayfield, not the guy you want doing your hiring if he's a manager in your organization. Freddie Kitchens is now the play caller for the Giants. Look, the Giants are a bad team offensively. The Texans are the worst team offensively in the NFL. Do you think Tim Kelly survives the rest of the season? Does this just feel like the Texans are going to take care of most of that type of business after the year is over? Because I don't think he's long for that job with the Texans.
Especially because I don't think the timing matters in trying to lure a new offensive coordinator. I think you can get that deal kind of done behind closed doors if that's what you want to do. And I don't know if this is the year that they make a push for I think there's a good chance Tim Kelly's back next year.
All
depends on what they decide to. Yeah, I know. Is David Culley going to be back next year?
Yeah, but I think Tim Kelly, we can ask McClain about this. I mean, don't you feel like 90% of the reason Tim Kelly was brought back was to try to get Deshaun Watson back into the fold? And then it would look
like that's what I assumed, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, I think that's the case, and then obviously Watson's not back in the fold, but it would look a little obvious to fire your offensive coordinator in April, you know, after he was brought back.
Right. I don't know. You know what it really probably depends on is what is his contract.
Maybe.
Like, the Texans are in reset mode, and some of that includes clearing the deck. They're paying a lot of money to people who are no longer employed with the Texans. So I suppose you could fire Tim Kelly and elevate Pep Hamilton, but I don't think they're planning on keeping David Culley around for the long term.
Yeah.
So that, I think there are a lot of coaches on the staff, Sean, that are as safe as their contracts are still intact next year. But you could fire Tim Kelly without hiring any new coaches. You just move Pep Hamilton over to OC.
I think, too, you know, I think also the Giants are in a different situation than the Texans are. The Giants, look, they're 3-7, so they're only a game better than the Texans in the standings. But the back of the NFC is a lot like the back of the AFC, where 9-8, you know, 8-9 might get it done to get a wild card spot. And the Giants, I think the big difference, Seth, is that the Giants probably feel like, all right, we got 7 or 8 games here to figure something out with Daniel Jones. We have got to put Daniel Jones in the best position to succeed so we can truly figure out if he's a guy that's worth A, having him back for a fourth year, B, exercising the fifth year option on. I mean, there's a lot of decisions coming up here with Daniel Jones and the Giants.
The Giants, the Browns, these teams that are in that spot where you just you're coming in once you're in that 3 and 4 year range and a guy hasn't proven that he's the guy, what do you do? Look at what happened with the Cowboys, where Dak Prescott, for all intents and purposes, had proven that he was the guy. You could make arguments against him or maybe questions about what his ceiling was going to be at that point. But the longer you keep kicking it out, the problem just escalates in size with each ensuing year. I think with Daniel Jones or Baker Mayfield, though, you've got to get over this notion that somehow because a quarterback's going to be on your team that you got to give him an extension.
Right.
Or that he needs anything other than just the contract that he's already got. You give him the fifth-year option, fine, and play that out if so be. And if you have to walk away from it, at least it's a relatively manageable hit. But like with Jared or any of those guys, you don't have to do the deal just to keep the guy happy when he's done nothing to prove that you should be keeping it happy.
Yeah, I think that's shifting right now. I think Baker Mayfield is proof of that the Browns haven't done anything. I think in a weird way, I think Lamar Jackson is kind of proof of that they're going to get to a deal with Lamar Jackson, I think. But I think teams are being at least a little bit more cautious about just going, all right, you're up next. You get the next best non-Mahomes contract. Step right up, Baker Mayfield. You know, you're next. It used to be the case, though. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid quarterback at one point. Joe Flacco was the highest paid quarterback. Derek Carr was the highest paid quarterback.
Well, yeah, but with Garoppolo, at least that was part of a trade. You know, it wasn't That was something that Garoppolo had some control or say in.
My point is that I think the days are over of undeserving quarterbacks being the highest paid quarterback in football. However they wind up on your team, I think it's Garoppolo's never been one of the 15 best quarterbacks in the NFL, nor is maybe Derek Carr, you could argue, I guess. You know, I think the Baker Mayfield situation in Cleveland to me is proof that maybe we're headed to different directions. To what you were just saying, where teams are a little more cautious about giving out $40 million a year.
Well, yeah, I think there's less of a perception now about it being so impossible to find a good quarterback. I think the sweet spot for quarterbacks was over the course of the last decade, where it seemed like there were about 6 good quarterbacks in the league, and everybody was just trying to figure out who it was, or I got to find a quarterback. I don't want to say they're more plentiful or they're more talented, but I think because of rule changes and because of the adoption of some of the college game into the NFL, it's easier to play quarterback. And because of that, you can find a winning quarterback or you can find a guy to take a flyer on a lot more easily than it used to be. So, yeah, the teams will be more willing to just say, no, I'm not sold on you, man. You gotta show something more.
My dream scenario in New York, after thinking it through, Seth, is for Daniel Jones to play really, really well for the last 7 games of the year with Freddie Kitchens calling the plays, and then for them to fire Joe Judge as the head coach, go to Daniel Jones and say, who would you like to be the head coach? And he says, Freddie Kitchens is who I want. I want it to be like a Baker Mayfield 2.0. I want them to go to Daniel Jones, and then Freddie Kitchens gets hired again by the franchise quarterback.
Or he wants them to hire David Cutcliffe, the Duke coach, who said the dukest thing of all time when Daniel Jones was drafted, which was, the best swag is no swag. That's saying, like, hey, all these things that the kids or any other people that don't look like us are saying isn't that's not the best way to be. The best way to be is just like us.
Cutcliffe. We're getting a lot of people weighing in on animals that are, at least, I don't know if they're like marquee animals in both Tampa Bay and Montreal, but they're at least present. Someone says,
So if Tampa splits their season with Montreal, you got to change the mascot to something. There are no Rays of any sort that I know of up in the frigid waters.
Someone says the Tampa Montreal house cats. I guess they probably have cats in both places. Someone says the black bears.
Maybe the feral cats.
Someone says, ooh, yeah.
Yeah, I bet are there black bears in Florida?
Someone said, you know what, Seth? A texter says there are black bears in Florida, so I choose to believe this texter. The texter wants royalties.
Seems hot and humid to be wearing that black coat. But yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're getting a lot of mascots for the Tampa Bay Montreal, potentially Montreal baseball team. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. Do you think Philip Lindsay winds up landing somewhere else? Do you think if somebody picks him up off of waivers, they inherit his contract? I can't imagine, not that he's got some monster deal. It's not Whitney Merciless or anything like that.
Yes. I don't think anybody picks him up on waivers, but I do think that they sign him either to it, maybe to a practice squad at least. This time of year, somebody's always looking for somebody that can step in and at least know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And I think when they watch the film, they'll say this. They'll be wrong, but they'll say it. They'll say, well, the blocking in front of him was atrocious. He'll be just fine if he gets behind our awesome offensive line, whoever that might be. He might be passable. I said this on Clinton's show yesterday. I think he can be passable behind a good offensive line, but he's got very little shiftiness, ability to change direction, no vision, any of those things. And maybe it's all injury-related based on how banged up he was last year, but I haven't seen it. Even on plays where there was good blocking and he had some positive yardage, I watch those plays and think, yeah, a lot of running backs could have gotten a lot more than he did on that play.
Yeah, dude, his time here, Philip Lindsay's time here, was so bad that it almost has me, almost has me willing to go actually invest some time today to go back and watch condensed versions of his good games in Denver his rookie year. He made the Pro Bowl his rookie year. He rushed for over 1,000 yards a couple times in Denver. He must have just, that offensive line must have just been opening up gaping holes for him, Philip Lindsay.
Yeah.
I just have such a hard time watching him this year, wondering how the hell did this guy run for 1,100 or 1,200 yards or whatever it was.
The hardest thing with watching both Lindsay and David Johnson that's so frustrating is just their complete lack of vision. I mean, when there's a cutback lane, they're just blind to it. They just don't even – and again, I don't know if maybe neither of them feel physically confident to take advantage of some of those cutback lanes, like they can't make the cut. But there's as bad as this offensive line is, there's even more yardage left on the table by the running backs. And that's where, like, if they get anybody, they bring anybody in, I think for this year, if you want to see something credible, it's got to be guys that at the very least have the mentality of Burkhead, where he's going to hit the line of scrimmage hard. He's going to make do, and even if it's bad blocking, then maybe he makes 2 or 3 yards out of it. If it's a better back than Burkhead, who's doing the same thing, maybe he makes 4 or 5 yards out of some of those plays.
Yeah.
But you can't have this tiptoeing around behind the line of scrimmage.
This will be faint praise, but I'll grant Lindsay this. At least he looked like he was willing to run the football. Like, he ran horizontally to the sideline. He would run literally like 12 yards of actual distance to gain about 6 inches of field position.
Yeah, remember he had that stat, like most total yards run per vertical yard?
Yeah.
So like his actual running around, whether it be north, south, east, west, like he ran the most per yard gained.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I don't know. It's it seemed almost impossible. Like,
no,
he would have had to start running 10 yards back with every play.
Yeah,
first.
No. Dude was like running a 5K to gain 2 yards. It was crazy. But I'll say this about Lindsay. Like, at least it looked like when there was contact, he was initiating. Like, David Johnson looks like he wants to get tackled. When David Johnson gets the football, it looks like his priority is getting on the ground as fast as possible, because he just wants to move on to the next play and cash that check, baby.
Him trying to break a tackle is like when somebody is telling you to stop tickling them, but you know they want you to keep tickling them. Like, the stop, 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 stop. That's David Johnson when he's getting tackled. Stop, stop. No, seriously, stop. Okay, keep tackling me. All right.
That's the weirdest analogy you've ever made. So yeah, Philip Lindsay gone. Let's get to headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
John McClain joins us at the top of the hour. Philip Lindsay gone from the Texans. Is he the last one, Seth? Do you think there'll be more? There'll be more sacrificial cuts like this, either for performance or culture issues with the Texans over the
next few years? You know what? That's something we don't know, because Philip Lindsay's been bad all year long. So we don't know if this was actually a performance cut or not. I mean, they keep Titus Howard at left guard no matter what they see with their eyeballs. That's the part, Sean, I guess I haven't said that yet. That's the part I'm most curious about with this cut is this based on anything other than performance? Because, yes, you could easily cut him for performance, but you could have said that at any point this season.
Right.
So I don't know. The Texans have worked themselves into a nice little spot here where they can cut Philip Lindsay and nobody even bothers asking, like, was this for performance reasons? Because it would sound like such a stupid question. I can't ask that question because somebody's going to say, well, look at this clown. Of course it was for performance reasons. You don't know the Texans. Could have been something. He might have complained about the asparagus in the cafeteria or something.
What are the chances Philip Lindsay pulled a Mark Ingram and went to them and said, like, hey, you know, I'd really like to, it's not working behind this line. I'd like to go play for a contender.
Yeah.
Clint actually brought that up as a possibility on their show yesterday, as a possibility that, you know, maybe Lindsay went and requested this and they accommodated him. And I'm thinking, if the Texans are accommodating Philip Lindsay, then just give up the whole castle. Then everybody should just walk in and ask to be released if they don't want to be here anymore.
That's like a guy at a median, if you give him a ham sandwich and he tells you he wishes it had been American cheese instead of Swiss.
Yes.
You're like, hey, buddy. Yeah. Like, seriously. Swiss cheese? Come on.
Yeah.
And then
exactly. Exactly. It's the same exact thing. So Lindsay gone. Most people are saying, hey, what is David Johnson going to be next? I don't know. Why is David Johnson still here? I don't know. You know, he's part of the Hopkins trade. Maybe they're still. To me, Seth, at this point with David Johnson, one of the reasons they're keeping David Johnson around is because they're trying to extract something out of the Hopkins trade. It ain't working. If anything, it's a reminder of just how bad that trade is.
Yeah, it's a huge
move
reminder.
On. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, every time you see David Johnson, it's impossible to not think about Jack Easterby.
Yes.
Where I think that the team has tried to move Jack Easterby out of the public eye, but there's no doing that while David Johnson is still there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stark reminder that, oh, yeah, this was the culture guy that was worth DeAndre Hopkins in a second-round pick. Not to mention he had $12 million guaranteed last year? No, it was $12 million total guaranteed when he came over.
Yeah.
They added to that this year.
Yep. Someone says on the text page, they should have kept Buddy Howell. He'd be our best back at this point. Yeah. Look, there were two backs on the Titans that were Houston Texans within the last 12 months, and they're both better than anything the Texans had. Deontay Foreman is better than anything the Texans are trotting out there on Sundays. Dontrell Hilliard, who the Titans just signed for the rest of the year yesterday. They had brought him up off the practice squad. They gave him a contract for the rest of the year and cut Adrian Peterson for Dontrell Hilliard. He was in training camp with the Texans this year. The running back, it's one of the most head-scratching things. In a two-year period that's had many head-scratching things, this backfield is one of the most head-scratching things.
So I guess the other thing would be, the other point, the thing I'd love to see is for them to cut Jeff Driscoll. Unless there's an argument that you could keep him around as your third-string quarterback, but most teams just do that on the practice squad. Jeff Driscoll taking up an active roster spot as a tight end, a position that he will fail at playing. And Sean, you know me, I never say this, ever. I don't like doing it. I don't like saying that a guy can't work out, because that's just it's a horrible way to live your life. And
yeah.
And people do surprise you all the time. He's not going to make it as a tight end.
No.
He just 100% won't. And I have no idea why, even if there was a chance that he would, why he's taking up an active roster spot right now. It's strange. It's weird. It doesn't make any sense. It's not gonna be the thing that keeps the Texans out of the playoffs, don't get me wrong. But it's yet another reminder that Jack Easterby, if you try to act like Jack Easterby isn't pulling a lot of strings there, then I have no idea why Jeff Driscoll is a tight end on this roster.
If you're a former tight end, are you more offended by Tim Tebow making a run at it as a tight end or Jeff Driscoll making a run at it as a tight end?
I think Jeff Driscoll, because at least Tim Tebow shows change of direction skills and some agility, where Jeff Driscoll does not at all. Either in the combine numbers or with the eyeballs, he's not a shifty athletic guy. He runs fast straight ahead. I think he's one of these guys that the only position he would have been suited to play was quarterback. You know, it just, which there's a lot of quarterbacks that are that way. But the notion that he's an athletic quarterback just because he's fast straight ahead is not an accurate one.
I'm told that he has a skill set similar to Lamar Jackson.
That's by the tight ends coach.
That's what I heard. That's what Andy Bischoff
said. Yeah, this crack squad of offensive coaches is telling you that. He's, you know, there's hardly anybody other than the Lamar Jacksons of the world as athletic as Jeff Driscoll.
That's how good they are, is they basically have Lamar Jackson as their third-string quarterback / fifth-string tight end.
That's honestly, Sean, that's the part of it where, I know what this season is, and I've come to terms with it, and I can have some fun with it and get worked up about some things and just not give a damn about others. I just don't want it to be a clown show. You know, I just don't want it to devolve into that. And there's something about having Jeff Driscoll taking up an active roster spot as a tight end converted from quarterback in the middle of the season.
Yeah.
This isn't some off-season project. That feels like a clown show. That feels like a bunch of clowns who don't know what they're doing. That part annoys me.
Yep.
Jeff Driscoll, give me a break.
That's a hot key now. I love that. The other bit of news with the Texans actually has to do with their opponents on Sunday, the New York Jets. Zach Wilson is back as the starting quarterback, so the second overall pick. We'll get a look at him in person on Sunday, Seth, out at NRG Stadium. Joe Flacco, and it's a good thing for the Jets because Joe Flacco and Mike White, their second and third string quarterbacks, both onto the COVID list. It's unclear as to I guess, do we know who tested positive? Are they both close contacts?
Yeah, Mike White tested positive, or at least that's the way I had seen it. Mike White had tested positive, and Joe Flacco was a close contact.
Okay, and Flacco is not vaccinated, so it's not a situation where he could even be back by Sunday to play. So it looks like Josh Johnson, he of about a jillion different teams in his NFL career, including the Houston Texans, will be the backup quarterback on Sunday for the New York Jets. So a game you can hear at noon right here on Sports Radio 610.
I guess as far as Mike White, he's on the list. Flacco is unvaccinated and he's a close contact. So I guess White, it's not clear whether he's on the list. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. COVID. They're not playing on Sunday, so it would appear. To the Astros we go. Kendall Graveman will not be a Houston Astro in 2022. The Astros trade deadline pickup from the Seattle Mariners is signing a contract reportedly with the Chicago White Sox. 3 years, $24 million, so good for Kendall Graveman. He parlays a really, really good 2021 into an $8 million a year deal with a playoff team, so good for him. Meanwhile, the Astros, we're still waiting on a Justin Verlander announcement, are we not? I've still, as of this morning, have not seen the team announce anything about Verlander coming back.
Nothing official. Yeah. And that's where we just don't know if it's going to be. Is this something related to the potential lockout on December 1st?
Yeah.
I don't know. Now, the Astros and Texans and various teams do this at times. It's happened with the Texans a bunch of times, actually, where some deal will get announced and a week goes by and you're like, wait a second, what's going on here? Is something fishy? And usually, almost every single time I can think of, it always works out. So I'm not overly concerned about it. I don't think there's any way Ben Verlander would have come out and said anything unless they felt rock solid about it.
Yeah, that's Justin Verlander's brother who broke the news about Verlander re-signing with the Astros. Seth, two Astros make the All-MLB. I didn't even know there was an All-MLB team, but they make the second team. Kyle Tucker and Yordan Alvarez, All-MLB second team.
It's yet another thing that the Major League Baseball does that nobody really knows about, or awards that they announce. I guess it's interesting that this is where my conspiracy brain gets going, Sean.
Yeah.
This is selected by fans and a select group of experts.
Okay.
And I just feel like it's interesting that the two guys that made first or second team All-MLB from the Astros were not a part of the 2017 Major League squad.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Carlos Correa or Yuli Gurriel or any of the other All-Stars from this year were not on the first or second team. Now, remember, this involves both leagues, not just the AL or NL, so it's harder to make the All-MLB, an award that Sean and I just learned about. But at the same time, I find myself furious, Sean. Furious, yes, that the Astros are obviously still subject to some kind of soft and silent boycott where this panel of experts refuses to acknowledge the greatness of anybody from the 2017
well,
team.
Well, the panel of experts, and I would say, you mentioned it, it's a combination of fan voting and a panel of experts. I would look more to the fan voting for the sentiment that you're talking about. And I don't think, I think that's legitimate what you're saying, actually. Look, these, Jordan and Kyle Tucker both make the All-MLB second team. The other five finalists that the Astros had, four of them were on the 2017 Astros. Three of them were position players. Yuli Gurriel at first base, Jose Altuve at second base, Carlos Correa at shortstop. Lance McCullers was a finalist as well. He was on that 2017 team. And then Ryan Presley was the other finalist that they had. So none of those five made first team or second team. Now, I'd have to go look and see, were they deserving of making
Fernando Tatis won it at shortstop.
Okay.
And but the second team player at shortstop was Trey Turner.
Okay. Yeah. Correa had a better year than him.
That's right. So I think that I'd say soft boycott.
Yeah.
It's a soft boycott. Well, I don't think, and also the fan voting, I don't ever remember seeing them request ballots for this, so
no.
I don't know what kind of fan voting they're doing or anything.
Either.
I didn't see a push by the Astros staff to get fans from Houston voting. So I would imagine that it's not even a soft boycott by fans nationwide. They're not going to vote for Astros. And by the select group of panels, I still think there are enough soft boycotters that it ends up putting Trey Turner up above Carlos Correa.
I think there's something to that, man. I absolutely think there's something to that. And I'm not angry about it. I'm not sitting here, you know, it's but it is what
you better damn start being angry about it.
I know.
Tell you that much.
I know. That's what I'm going to focus on.
This is how they get you.
That's what I'm going to focus on over the next 4 days. Last headline, real quick, and we'll get to John McClain in studio with us here, presented by HornSolutions.net. The college football playoff. For the first time, we've got a group of five team in the top four in one of the, if the season ended today, this would be the playoff pairing scenarios. Cincinnati. If the season were to end today, Seth, Cincinnati would be facing the University of Georgia in a semifinal game in the playoff. The top four, Georgia, Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama, Cincinnati at number four, Michigan and Notre Dame, 5 and 6. And a lot of these teams are going to play each other. Ohio State and Michigan play this weekend. Georgia and Alabama are going to play in the SEC title game. The Big 12 is kind of lurking with Oklahoma State and Oklahoma sitting at 7 and 8. This is fun. This is why I like the 14 playoff, because of the debate and discussion that it generates. Because the fact of the matter is, a lot of these games down the stretch wind up being de facto quarterfinal game. Michigan Ohio State is basically a quarterfinal game. The loser of that game is out. The winner is probably in.
Yeah. It's all this stuff that I don't know. I still don't, for the life of me, understand how people thought that it was that the playoff system was going to make the regular season less important in college football.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't have that every game matters feel to it, but it certainly, especially once you go to 8, it won't be like it's impossible to lose a game. But more teams stay relevant later into the season, and these games matter a whole lot more. I think that the Cincinnati presence, the fact that Georgia is as good as they are, and the fact that Cincinnati has lofted themselves up this way, I feel like this is more affirmation that 8 teams in the playoffs is the right way to go. I think that we're closer to having a little bit more fluidity from year to year than people thought, because for several years there, it was just there were the blue bloods at the top and that was it, and there was nothing you could do about it. I think we're closer to that than we realize, and that once you go to 8 teams especially, I think that filters down to recruiting ability by the teams that are in the playoffs and all of that. So I even though it's still usually going to be a bludgeoning by 1 versus 8 and 2 versus 7, I still think it's the right way to go.
Yeah, I do too. I would agree. And there's so much money to be generated from it too.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.